From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the Senate failing to pass a measure earlier today that would secure the border and open the roughly 25% of the government that has been shut down now for over a month. Also, the Department of Health and Human Services, in a positive note, taking another step to protect religious freedom. Pennsylvania Congressman Mike Kelly is here in just a moment on that promising story. And this past Tuesday night, on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, New York Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law the Reproductive Health Act. It's the most extreme abortion law in America. New York Republican State Senator Robert Ort, who opposed the governor, joins me from Albany. And in the encouraging news column, a wave of Bible literacy bills are emerging in state legislatures across the country. Florida, Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, Virginia, and West Virginia that would allow more students in public high schools to study the Old and the New Testaments. I actually was involved in that 20 years ago, and Louisiana being one of the first states to do that. Well, North Dakota State Representative Aaron McWilliams, who was one of the co-sponsors of that bill, will join me with the positive details. And finally, on this Thursday edition of Washington Watch, I want to return to the sustained and what I believe to be a coordinated attack on manhood. I'll be joined by Dr. Pat Fagan, director of the Marriage and Religion Research Initiative, to address this escalating assault on manhood. We've seen it recently from the American Psychological Association, Gillette, and others. So, man up. Don't miss that conversation here later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, Department of Health and Human Services has granted South Carolina and others now a religious waiver. It's going to affect others. A religious waiver aimed at protecting the ability of faith-based foster care and adoption providers to serve the state's children. Now, there have been some in Congress that have been fighting for a while to protect these types of organizations that are faith-based. They simply want to operate according to their faith. Joining me now is one of those leaders, Representative Mike Kelly. He represents the 16th District of Pennsylvania. He serves on the House Committee on Ways and Means and is the ranking member on the Subcommittee on Oversight, and appeared with him on the Laura Ingraham show last Friday night. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much, Tony, and thanks for having me on and for continuing the fight and the fact that we're never walking away from this battle.
Well, and you've been fighting. You've been at the tip of the spear on this. So the news from the Health and Human Services Agency, which, you know, under the Trump administration, has been consistent in protecting religious freedom, maybe not as fast as we would like to see, but changing these policies take time. But this is a positive development.
Yeah, well, it really is. And as you know, because we've talked about this before, and I think our listeners understand this, the attacks on faith-based adoptive and foster care has been just unprecedented. And in the last few months of the Obama administration, different regulations were put into place that were saying, listen, you know what, if you really want to still receive federal funding, you cannot keep those deeply held religious beliefs you have. You're going to have to open that up and accept same-sex marriage partners and however else the left wants to define it as being discriminatory against those folks. And say, you know what, that's not the case at all. What we're saying is, don't exclude the faith-based community from an issue that they've taken care of since day one. That's where it all started, for crying out loud. And now to say that somehow they're discriminating against other people. The only thing that the Inclusion Act, which, you know, we've been involved in for many, many years now, is the fact that all we want to do is be included in it. And if the focus really is, Tony, on the children, then this should never even come up.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Lynn Johnson, Assistant Secretary for Health and Human Services at the Administration for Children and Family, said yesterday, quote, "We have approved South Carolina's request to protect religious freedom and preserve high-quality foster care placement option for children," end quote. And Congressman Kelly, as you said, this is about the children, but you have these Christian adoption agencies that are motivated by their faith, and they're being forced to make a choice in some cases between their faith and staying in business. And many of them are walking away from it, and the children are the ones who are suffering.
Absolutely. At a time when we need these organizations probably more than we ever had in our history, just because of the sheer numbers. And of course, with the opioid crisis, a lot of these children are not able to be taken care of by loving families who want to have them and want to take care of them and take the place of the missing parent that needs to be there. And in the faith-based part of it, there's nothing to me that's more egregious than actually turning a blind eye and accusing people of something that they are not, and trying to then separate them and say, you know what, if you're in California, if you're in Illinois, if you're in Massachusetts, you're in D.C., you're not going to get any federal funding. And in Pennsylvania, as you know, Governor Wolf has gone the opposite way of what we would think Pennsylvanians would want. And a lot of our faith-based organizations are going to leave. They're not going to be able to sustain the services they have right now because they are being denied this funding.
Yeah, and so people are absolutely clear on this, Congressman Kelly. As you pointed out in your opening remarks, this is not about excluding those that want to cater to same-sex relationships or whatever. This has nothing to do with them. All this does is says you cannot be excluded because you have a statement of faith that you happen to believe the Bible, which, by the way, has been the guidelines for civilization for, 5,000 years, that marriage is the union of a man and a woman. You cannot be barred from participating just because you hold that view, which is happening across America.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a reverse discrimination. We see it happening all the time on the far left. The far left looks at, as long as you agree with us and agree with us at every single level and into the intensity that we believe, then you're going to allow to be able to participate. If you don't, you're going to be excluded. And to me, this just flies in the face of the hypocrisy that exists with this. The faith-based community has never, ever said that other organizations, other agencies, regardless of what their policies are, can't be included. All we've said is, don't exclude the faith-based community. Why? Because they don't agree with some other agency's stance on this? There's never been a stance from the faith-based people that said these folks should be denied any type of funding because they don't believe what we believe. That is just flies in the face of what the First Amendment is about. And Tony, I got to thank you so much for your dedication, a lifetime of protecting religious freedom. And I think that's what's on the line right now. It's being sold as something else, but it's an exclusion, not an inclusion. Yeah. And if the purpose is really to take care of children, then this should never come up and say, and you don't believe what we believe, you don't talk the way we talk, you don't have the same inherent beliefs that we do, so you can't participate anymore. We're going to exclude you and say, oh, and by the way, thanks for starting this movement several hundred years ago. If it hadn't been for you folks, this never would have happened. So turning their back on the faith-based community that has always been there for foster care and adoptive care and saying now because you don't talk the way we do, you don't believe what we believe in, we're going to exclude you.
And Congressman Kelly, there's a reason that faith-based organizations are involved in this. It is because in Scripture we're actually instructed repeatedly that we're to look out for the widow and the orphan. James 1:27 says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. This is at the core of our faith, is to take care of the vulnerable. And we're being prohibited. I mean, we have seen in certain jurisdictions where these adoption agencies and other faith-based organizations, Catholic Charities, have been forced out of business simply because they would not compromise on biblical truth.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think when we talk about these things, Tony, I mean, it really comes to the point, and I hear this, and I hear it in mass from time to time, this idea that we need to be more accommodating, we need to be more flexible, we need to change our views. Nothing could be farther from what it is that we need to be aware of. Listen, I don't think we want to exclude people. We don't want to be that type of a society. But by the same token, when you marginalize what it is that you believe, when you start to make accommodations that fly in the face of your basic faith beliefs, then you're going way beyond accommodating. You are starting then to move in a direction that you can't gain back later on. And I just think there's a time to draw a line in the sand, and this is that time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Could not agree more. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Glad that you're with us on this Thursday afternoon. Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania, my guest. I want to shift gears for just a moment, Mike, before you got to go. I was with the president yesterday. I met with the president discussing the shutdown and trying to get government back over. The Senate not able to get it together to get something over to the House to reopen government. Looks like the stalemate continues. But right before our meeting with the president, the speaker sent word that she was disinviting him to do the State of the Union, which was a part of our conversation. Of course, the president announcing last night that he would respect that. She was the Speaker of the House. There's got to be a way forward here. It looks like it's and I applaud the president, actually. You know, it's in line with Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath. I think it was a good move on his part. I'm hoping that we see the Democrats in some form or fashion reciprocate and we can get moving forward.
I'm in total agreement with you. First of all, to turn your back on what we've always looked at as saying the State of the Union, where the president gets a chance to address the American people from the floor of the House, is something that has just been there. And it doesn't really matter who the president is or who the party in power is. The idea was always the state of our union. That's not a right. political stance. That is about the actual state of our union. And it's important that the president of the United States has a chance to stand before the Congress of the United States, the People's House, and make put forward where we are. But to turn him away now and saying no, and turn this into just a political stance as opposed to what's best for the country. This is abhorrent, what's happening. And it sets an example, I think, of what people look at as we can have divided government and still be able to actually have these type of activities take place. This is the first time in our history that the Speaker of the House has turned away the President of the United States. And let nobody be misled by this or misunderstanding what's taking place. This is the Speaker's way of showing the President of the United States just exactly where she stands and where their party stands. There should be an outcry on both sides of the aisle to allow the President of the United States to come in and deliver the State of the Union in front of elected officials. I've always thought of myself as I represent Pennsylvania's 16th Congressional District, 705,687 people. I have no idea how they're all registered or how they vote, but I do know I represent them and their values, and I try to bring that to Washington, D.C. But to tell now the President of the United States and the Speaker of the House denying the President that opportunity to come before the country, not just the Congress, but the country, and right. say, no, not now. And I thought the President was well with him and say, you know what, then when it is time for me to come forward, I will come forward and I will deliver that speech from the floor of the Congress.
I am concerned. It sets a dangerous precedent that further divides the nation, which we have to come back together as a nation. Congressman Kelly, out of time, I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank you for your continued leadership on Capitol Hill, defending religious freedom and defending the children, giving them that right to be placed into homes that love them, care for them, and want to look after them.
Well, Tony, thank you, and thanks for everything you're doing for this wonderful, wonderful nation of ours.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, folks, find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right. Don't go away. We're coming back, and we're going to New York. Most expansive pro-abortion law in the country.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, on Tuesday night, which happened to be the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, New York Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law the Reproductive Health Act. It is the most extreme abortion law in America. It guarantees abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy, prohibits born-alive protections for babies who survive botched abortions, and eliminates any and all health and safety regulations relating to abortion from the New York Criminal Code. This is moving in the opposite direction of every place else in the nation. As we have seen in the last 10 years, more states moving to be restrictive of abortion, make sure also that women are taken care of and get the best health care in these abortion clinics. New York is moving the opposite direction. Now, of course, not everybody in New York is for that. In fact, my next guest, New York Republican Senator Robert Ort, a pro-life politician who was outraged by what happened and tried to stop the governor, but unfortunately unsuccessfully. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
Senator, I have to assume that this was heartbreaking to you and your colleagues who understand the importance of the preservation and the sanctity of human life. This is such a blot on New York.
Well, it was a very sad day, and it was made all the more sad for me by the contrast. You know, you were referring to the reaction in the gallery when it was passed. The Senate Democrats, who control the gallery, as they are the majority party, you know, they made sure that the gallery was packed with pro-abortion, you know, supporters of this bill. And there were only a few. There were plenty of pro-life supporters at the Capitol, but there were only a handful that were allowed into the gallery. And when it passed, of course, it was passed to all kinds of applause and cheering. You know, you would have thought you were at a sporting event or something really positive had happened. And many of us, in fact, all of us on the Republican side of the chamber, I think viewed it as really a shameful and sad day in New York State history and New York State government history, where we did all the things you just said. We really almost basically are moving towards infanticide. We removed protections for women. So now you don't even have to be a licensed physician to perform an abortion. We, you know, allow abortion all the, through the entire term for almost any reason. And I think importantly as well, under previous law, if I assaulted or harmed a woman who was pregnant, and that resulted in the death of her unborn child, I could be prosecuted for that, you know, as a homicide or manslaughter, you know, recognizing the life of the unborn child that was lost. By moving it out of the criminal code, that will not happen now. And so what you effectively have in this law is you have the removal, legally speaking, as well as otherwise, of any recognition of the life and the value placed on that life of the unborn child. And that is what the Democratic majority and the governor have done here in New York.
You know, Senator, what I find, well, there's so many things I find troubling about this, but of course, Cuomo trying to position himself as on the national political stage, pushing back against Trump. And, of course, all of this is about the pro-life gains made nationally, the Supreme Court. This all began with, well, what if there are five justices that would overturn Roe v. Wade? And so we have to take action to protect it. They're not protecting the status quo. As you just clearly pointed out, this is going way beyond the status quo to moving New York in a column all by itself. And believe me, brother, I would not want to have this on my resume as the governor of the state. I believe he is moving into dangerous ground with this type of legislation.
Absolutely. I think there's even women or folks in New York who may consider themselves pro-choice, and I've heard from them, and they've told me this is too far even for them. But as you probably are aware, you know, right now New York and New York City particularly, the progressives, the radical left, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, she's from New York. She's one of ours, you know, down there in Washington, and a lot of other ones. They are, you know, this is where they are moving. This is really a preview nationally of where the Democratic Party and the radical wants to
but
go.
I want to put this very quickly in perspective for our listeners. It's not like abortion was somehow being lost in New York. I mean,
correct.
New York has
correct.
Twice the abortion rate of the national average. New York alone has 200 abortion facilities, a majority of the 120,000 children killed by abortion in New York every year are minority children whose mothers live at or below the poverty line. In fact, I remember a statistic that if you're a minority child, more minority children are aborted than born in New York City.
You know, Tony, you're so right. And the Democrats do this all the time, certainly in New York. They create this sense that somehow there is this threat, you know, that somehow, like you said, that abortion rights or whatever it was being lost. And they continued, and one of the things that really upset me on the floor was several members of the majority kept saying, we have to do this to protect against the radical conservative Supreme Court, you know, the President Trump Supreme Court, when in fact this bill has been around for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So
they're using that
they
as an excuse.
Anything. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Senator, we got to leave it there. Out of time. I want to thank you not only for joining us today, but I want to thank you for standing as light in what right now is a very dark place.
Well, thank you very much, Tony, and thank you for what you do, and thank you for having me.
All right, Senator Ort from New York. Pray for them. Pray for guys like that. All right. Don't go away. Coming back with good news from North Dakota. Advancing the Bible in our public schools. That's next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, in the good news column, a second wave of Bible literacy bills are emerging in state legislatures that would allow more students in public high schools to study the Old and the New Testaments. Now, that's literature. They're not religion classes. But it's a matter of literacy. You really cannot have an appreciation for the United States without an understanding of the Bible, because so much of what we have in place in our country is built upon these biblical principles. It's Western civilization. I was actually a part of that first wave back when I was in the Louisiana legislature. We were able to get it into the Louisiana schools. Been there about 20 years now. But we've got states now moving with this second wave: Florida, Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, Virginia, and West Virginia. In fact, my next guest is North Dakota State Representative Aaron McWilliams, who's co-authored one of the bills there in North Dakota. Representative McWilliams, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's great to be on your show today. Thank you for the call.
Well, congratulations. You told the USA Today that the Bible is an integral part of our society and deserves a place in the classroom. I want to ask you, are you getting much pushback on the bill, or do people there agree with your view?
Well, thanks. That's a good question, Tony. You know, it's kind of funny. If you want to do a Google search for Aaron McWilliams in North Dakota, you'll see that in the last 2 weeks, I've received more media attention in my life. You know, I think I've done about 8 or 9 interviews in the last week or so. And, you know, we do have some good support here. There's a lot of people that have, you know, this misunderstanding that as soon as you teach a Bible in class, that it's a separation of church and state issue. And it's simply not the case. I think there's a big difference between a Bible and a church. You know, in my view, Tony, a Bible is a collection of books, whereas a church, where people make up a church. And it's the faith that's being taught. And I think that's a big difference there. And it's, you know, certainly a message that needs to get out. I mean, even in the 1963 court opinion, the court said that the state may not establish a religion of secularism, that is, a sense of affirmative and of opposing. The court also said that without a study of comparative religion or history of religion and its relationship, the advancement of civilization, that it certainly may be said that the Bible is worthy of study for its literary and historic qualities. That was said in 1963.
Right. I mean, you some of the idioms we use, some of the phrases we use, like it's a David and Goliath situation. You know what? Increasingly, people don't understand that because they're not literate. They don't have the understanding. They're not literate when it comes to the Bible, and that's a part of that. Of course, it's much deeper than that, as you pointed out. It's just a matter of understanding where we got some of the principles of our government that's a part of Western civilization that are unique, and they're deserving to be protected. And the only way you can do that is by letting people be exposed to them. And I want to hit the point that you just made, because there are those on the left, like Americans United for Separation of Church and State, that are talking about this is indoctrination, this is religion teaching, this is a literature course. Just allowing students to be well-rounded and understand. So, you know, I know these outside agitators come in, but in terms of your constituents, the people in North Dakota, which are, you know, they're salt of the earth people, I would have to assume that this is overwhelmingly popular in the state.
You know, it's kind of interesting. North Dakota is fiercely independent. So if you didn't know, Tony, I grew up in Louisiana. And I moved up to North Dakota 10 years ago. I grew up in a little town called Pineville. And so it was interesting to me that when I moved up here, I started campaigning of how independent people really are. And I think people are skeptical at first. And when you first start, you know, to say the word Bible in school, you know, it's like a curse word. You can't say the B word around education. And when you explain to them what the class is and what opportunities it opens up, then people really start opening up. But I think at first people are really skeptical, and even in my district they're skeptical.
Well, it is a part of that education, but as part of it is pushing back on the narrative of the left that is misconstruing what this actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it, you know, Tony, you brought up that our country is founded on these principles. I mean, the system of judges, you know, can be traced back, some scholars say, to Moses' father-in-law, or the concept of retribution, or the concept of forgiveness. And the concept of forgiveness isn't just that I forgive somebody because they did something wrong to me. It's also the concept of forgiveness of a loan, or forgiveness, or like the expungement of a record, or sealment of a record, still comes from that very concept of forgiveness. And that's a Judeo-Christian point of view.
Yeah, it's important that we understand the origins of those, and we understand the foundation of the system of government we have. Very quickly, Representative McWilliams, when do you anticipate a hearing on your bill or the next step on it?
Well, we had a hearing on the bill, Tony, last week, and I testified on the bill. There's a little bit of media there, but not as much as we thought. But right now we're waiting on committee action on it, so it hasn't been voted out of committee yet. And, of course, after it's voted out of committee, it'll go to the Senate. And if it passes the Senate, we'll start the process over in the House.
All right. Well, we'll be watching it very closely, and we wish you the best. And great to have another native of Louisiana on the line.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Keep up the good work. Representative Aaron McWilliams from North Dakota, originally from Pineville, Louisiana. Know exactly where that's at. It's where Louisiana College is at, where I served on the Board of Trustees. All right, folks, don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch. Yes, there's still more to come. Toxic masculinity, or is it simply manhood in the crosshairs? Dr. Pat Fagan joins me next for what I think will be a very interesting conversation. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right. Gillette put out a two-minute long ad, about 2 weeks ago, so-called toxic masculinity. It has racked up about 25 million views, 313,000 dislikes on YouTube. It opens with various scenes of men and boys doing various obnoxious and awful things. It is implied that we men have excused these behaviors by shrugging and muttering, boys will be boys. Not true, but it's what they suggest. The ad makes this point very subtly by showing a line of men saying, boys will be boys, in unison as they watch two other boys fight. And really this comes at the same time. As I said at the beginning of the show, I think it's a coordinated attack. I mean, we've seen this since the feminist movement launched, but it's becoming even more intense. The American Psychological Association, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, where they're now talking about toxic masculinity and how they're putting out these new guidelines for counselors. Well, here to put all this in perspective for us is my next guest, Dr. Pat Fagan. He's the director of the Marriage and Religion Research Initiative. He wrote a piece entitled A Deliberate Rejection of Traditional Men. Dr. Pat Fagan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be back with you, Tony. Thank you.
I just love, by the way, folks, I love the work that Dr. Fagan does. He was at FRC a number of years ago now with Mary, and the website, by the way, we've got a link to it. Great material. I use it all the time. Go to tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. All right, Dr. Fagan, am I overstating it? Is there an assault on manhood?
Oh, it's been going on for a long time. It started in a serious way back in the 60s with just prior to the founding of the National Organization of Women. And most of the women involved in that organizing had set out very deliberately to remove the married father from the family. And that, of course, is the beginning. When that happens, when you take the father out of the family, all the kids suffer, but the boy suffers much more than the girl does. And you see that today in the real disparities, for instance, in graduation from high school, graduation from college. There's a very significant difference. The girls have been gaining, and that's great, but not at the cost of men. And that's not great. And when you dig into that, what you find is it is the girls who are raised by single mothers do much better, much, much better than the boys who are raised by single mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and that leads to all sorts of other things. Actually, you get more violence, you get more depression. The opioid epidemic, which is hitting, you know, men in their 40s and mid-40s at a huge level, they are overwhelmingly unmarried men and men particularly from backgrounds of broken families. So the war on men has been going on a long time and essentially is being conducted by women. Not all women, of course, but those radical feminists set out to do this.
But if I look at this and I'm seeing it correctly, the very people that helped create this problem are now offering more of the same as the solution. We need to go back that men were not essential, and so it began the breakup of the family, that male role model for young boys in the home, who then began to look for other alternatives, which from the father, the boys learn how to, you know, to be a man and not be overly aggressive, and they learn how to handle manhood and that transformation from a boy to a man. But if they don't have that father, they look elsewhere to their peers who are still trying to figure this out as well. So now we have a mess which has led to inappropriate behavior by men. And so the same people that created this problem are now telling us the solution is that, well, it's toxic manhood. We got to make them more conform to this, you know, genderless idea of human beings.
Yeah, actually, the whole solution, if you want good men that women will admire, want to have as the fathers of the children, you find them coming out of intact married families that worship God weekly. And where that was nailed in a great way by one of the leading, most eminent family sociologists in the country was Brad Wilcox. His very first book was called Soft Patriarchs, The New Men. And there, that data has been clear for now over 20, 25 years. If the American Psychological Association wanted to have less toxic men, they would be behind intact marriage and behind the regular weekly worship of God. There's never a word about that in the two guiding documents, by the way. There was a similar document issued in 2007 for the American Psychological Association, giving us guidelines for psychologists for men and girl, or for women and girls. You go through both documents, there's not a single mention of marriage or worship in either. Like, this is part of the, there's been a 200-year assault on the family, starting really with the French Revolution, but really gathering storm with Marx and Engels. And they saw the family and religion as the two big obstacles to their dream of how man should be. It took them, actually starting in the 1920s, Lenin was behind the forming of the Frankfurt School. That's where you had high intellectuals, very bright people, very well placed in Frankfurt University. Many of them later ended up later at Columbia. By 1960, they had figured out that the way to take down both the family and religion at the same time is by taking men out of the family. And how do you do that? You let sex go wild, because us men are suckers for sex gone wild. It's our weak spot. It's women's weak spot, too, but it's even weaker for men. You know that. Every man knows that. That's how they did it. And this is just more of the same.
So the key to, you know, rebuilding is, as you point out, the two key factors to helping men, boys, become responsible men is, number one, have them in a home with a mother and a father who are married, and two, encourage that family to be worshiping on a regular basis. So from a governmental standpoint, obviously, you know, government's not going to, you know, demand religious participation, but they shouldn't do anything that would discourage it, which we see increasingly, especially in the last administration, attacking religious expression. And we should not do anything that would prohibit or discourage family formation. In fact, we should be encouraging marriage between men and women. But that doesn't appear to be the policy route that we're choosing right now.
No, well, the Supreme Court led an assault on the family. Actually, the Supreme Court has been the major vehicle for that, starting with Griswold. And what year was that? Was that 65, I think? And then, you know, that was taking sex outside of marriage. Griswold was about was really that unmarrieds had the right to contraceptive, which was really mean taking sex outside of marriage. Before that, of course, people have always kicked over the traces on that. The government was protecting marital sexuality. Then you had Roe v. Wade in 73, and then you had that continuing series of assault on, let's see, what were the big ones? Roe v. Wade in 73, Casey and Planned Parenthood, which really was making sure that even 16-year-olds could have the right to contraceptive, to sex outside of marriage.
Well, but I would add to that, Dr. Fagan, I would add to the attacks on religion and the public expression of religion in 63 and 64 when we kicked prayer in the Bible out of schools. I mean, that's a part of this as well.
Very definitely. Very definitely. Actually, the history here teaches it a lot. And what you, like the Marxist feminists, the Frankfurt School, whatever you want to call those progressives, they're now such a, you know, tight-knit, well-heeled, well-connected. And they're so big, actually, that you don't need membership of the Communist Party. Forget that. That's old hat. But they all recognize each other. And they penetrated the key people-forming institutions. The NEA, by the way, this work has not really been done. The NEA has probably been populated at the top bureaucratic level, not their public presidents, by Marxists since the, I would suspect, the 60s. You see, the Frankfurt School got into Teachers College at Columbia in the 40s. And their graduates, you know, not every one of them, of course, the vast majority of them are great people. Actually, I have a niece who's just taken a doctorate at Columbia University, and she's fantastic. I trust all of my kids and all your kids and everyone else to it. But back in the 40s, they had kept their eye. If you look at the annual general meeting resolutions of the NEA, and I did this back in the mid-80s, they were like statements right out of Das Kapital, Marx and Engels. So that didn't happen without the people in the power slots guiding that organization. Right. Then if you look at what happened to sex in the schools and all the rest of it, it all fits the pattern. Well, you had the same thing happening in
Let me ask you this, Dr. Fagan, as we look at where we now stand with all of this, as you've laid out the history of this and what it's culminated now, where you even have advertisement from, you know, Gillette, Procter & Gamble product, you know, talking about this toxic masculinity without addressing the real solutions. How is this going to affect counseling? As we saw the APA putting out these guidelines, I mean, this is going to have an impact upon therapists and clients as well, denying them, I think, in many ways, real counseling and solutions, because I think this is putting ideology above the needs of vulnerable people that are seeking help.
Well, actually, you've got to keep in mind the way the progressive left, or whatever you want to call them, does it. They slice the salami very thin. These are not mandates. These are guidelines. Psychologists in good standing can attack them. And a number of that. In my blog, I linked.
But they are shaping. They are shaping.
They're shaping, exactly. And what is guideline today, believe me, will become mandate in 10, 15, 20 years. They do flag, actually, these guidelines last for the next 10 years when they will be revisited. Now, what will that be? So you're right. This is the shaping. This is the soft shaping. The agenda is clear. So I think what the solution, actually, is. Look, where they'll find all the toxicity in every single federal survey that measures both, the toxicity that they talk about is greatest by far in the broken family that doesn't worship at all. And it's the least of it, and instead you've got the greatest strength in the intact married family that worships weakly. Look, the American Psychological Association is in these things. There are other areas where it is, but in these things, it is no longer a scientific organization. It is pure activist ideology. And They did the same, actually, in a number of their amicus briefs. I wrote on the one back in Obergefell.
Right.
They posited a whole lot of essentially very weak, and they knew it was weak. They posited a strong social science, what they wouldn't let a master's degree student get their degree if they said that this was robust stuff. They used what are called snowball samples, opportunity samples.
And they have been hijacked.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Within, there are great psychologists. Here's what, by the way, if you need a psychologist, and there are great psychologists out there, and many people will benefit from them and need their help. First thing you do is you ask the psychologist, do you agree with the sidelines or with these guidelines? And if they equivocate at all, go somewhere else. Find a different psychologist. They're good ones out there.
Nice.
So that's what I would do.
Dr. Pat Fagan, as always, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, Dr. Pat Fagan. In fact, if you'd like to read his article, go to tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. It's on the website posted there. I really like his work because what he does is he actually takes the government data that's collected through all these different surveys and census and all this stuff. So it's a massive amount. But then he creates these models and goes through and he looks at it. And then on his website, there's different graphs that show the intersection between family structure, religious participation, and then the various pathologies that we see out there socially. And very enlightening. It's good stuff. There's a problem with, you know, I don't use their term toxic masculinity. There's a problem with males who do not understand what it means to be a man. And that's the number one role of a father, is not simply to have children, but it is to take those children, especially those boys and the daughters, to protect them, but the boys to shepherd them into manhood, modeling and instructing them on what it means to be a godly man. As Christians, we have that responsibility. And that means we protect them from some of the outside influences, like this kind of garbage that's going on right now. We need men. We need men that will man up and act like men. There is a difference between men and women. Now, some may find that offensive, but if you're offended by that, so be it. There is a difference. God created us differently. We all have – it doesn't mean one of us are males or better than females. I never said that. We're all equal. But we have distinct roles and purposes. God has created us for a reason. All right, folks, out of time. I'm going to talk more about this because I'm passionate about it. We got to go away. But until next time. I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, Ephesians 6. When you've done everything you do, you can do. When you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.